Coming to you live from the Moen Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Kyle Stokes. Larry Mantle taking a well-deserved Friday for himself. He will be back with us on Monday. You will hear from him, though. Larry's already prepped an hour of Film Week with our critics. That comes your way at 11 o'clock. And later this hour, we're going to walk through which restrictions from the coronavirus pandemic are lifting this weekend. Maybe you need to get your mom some flowers for Mother's Day. That is coming up. But first, we turn to the public schools. Earlier this week, Los Angeles Unified School Superintendent Austin Buettner said he still doesn't know whether it'll be safe to reopen school buildings for the start of the fall semester. And he told me that even if they do, schools probably won't run in the same way.
We might have to look at some combination that is a hybrid where students are in school a couple days a week and continuing to pursue their studies online a couple days a week, because it's not so simple as moving the desks apart because we don't have the budget. We can't exactly double our workforce overnight. And I don't think the state's going to give us double the budget to do so.
Just so many unanswered questions about how all of this is going to work. So we want to talk it through with you, what we know and what we don't know. Parents, teachers, students, support staffers in schools, school nurses. Do you think that it's a good idea for us to start taking steps to reopen school campuses right now? And if you don't, what kinds of changes do you think that your school should be making that would make you feel safer before schools do reopen their campuses? I want to hear your thoughts at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. Take a break from distance learning, teachers and students, and give us a call or head to the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. And it's not just Los Angeles Unified in this bind, but districts across the region facing this challenge. LA County's districts serve more than 1 million students, all of them with parents and caretakers who need clarity about what's happening in schools for their own sakes, for their own sanity, and for their jobs, perhaps. And overseeing all of these schools in LA County is the county's superintendent of schools, Deborah Duardo. Dr. Duardo, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you making the time. So your office has convened a task force of 23 different school leaders that are going to study reopening. I want to start with an overview of the challenge that it is that they're studying. What are the obstacles that you're talking about on this task force to reopening school campuses?
Well, there are many obstacles. We want to make sure that our number one priority is the health and safety of our students and our employees. So one is making sure that we have clear guidelines on what the precautionary measures are that we're going to need to take when we have students returning to school. We want to make sure that we have adequate resources to meet those guidelines. For example, we want to make sure that we have the personal protection equipment, so the masks and gloves, that we have adequate funding for disinfectants and cleaning supplies, and really in order for us to implement the physical distancing that we know is going to be required. So besides the resources, we're also looking at various models, because we know for the physical distancing, we're going to have a much smaller percentage of our students physically present at school at any given time. So looking at some blended learning where we may have some students still doing part of their time, their instruction remotely, while others are on campus, looking at year-round schedules or alternative schedules, staggering start times, hybrid of these types of things, and looking at ensuring how we're going to be able to implement those differences.
Yeah.
We also need to look at, many of these things have to be negotiated with our union partners. So there's some challenges. And lastly, I like to say that we're looking at a historic state budget deficit. So this is coming at a time when we know we're going to have significant cuts to our budget.
Yeah, I think that we should talk about those budget issues. but put a pin in that and return to the staggered schedules for a moment. And I just want to underline what you just said about the idea about exploring these blended learning models. Maybe this is a good opportunity to level with parents here that if and whenever schools reopen, is what you're saying that it's unlikely that we're likely to go back to school the way it was, even if it takes a while for schools to reopen, that whatever it is, staggered schedules, blended learning, however you want to call it, AM, PM shifts, it's not going to look like what it looked like before?
Absolutely. It's going to look very different because we need to ensure that our children and our employees are safe when they come back.
With us is also UCLA epidemiologist Karen Michaels. She's the chair and professor of the Department of Epidemiology at UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. And Dr. Michaels, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, I think that this would be a good opportunity for those of you who have questions about reopening schools to speak not only to Dr. Duardo about what school officials are thinking, but also to Professor Michaels, who's a public health expert, about the wisdom of moving into reopening public schools. So if you have questions or comments about the idea of reopening public schools at this stage, give us a call, 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. Go to the AirTalk page and leave a comment. But I'll start. Professor Michaels, I'm wondering if you can talk through what we know about how this disease affects children, because I feel like very early on in the crisis, the feeling was children simply didn't get COVID-19. But there's been a lot of new research that I think has at least caused me to revisit that notion. So let's fact check. How big of a risk are children to get COVID-19 and to spread COVID-19?
Yes, that's a really good question. And as you rightly pointed out, in the beginning, there was some thought that maybe children are less affected, less infectious. But the latest data and the latest research has supported a slightly different picture. It seems like children are affected by COVID-19 to the same degree as adults, and they can infect other people also at the same degree. So that doesn't seem to be much of a difference with this age spectrum.
There was a study of Chinese cases I was reading about that said children are not as susceptible to infection. This is in the New York Times. It wrote about this. It said only a third, children are only about a third as susceptible as an adult. But when they're in school, they become disease vectors. They have three times more contacts with other people, which cancels out whatever advantage that they might have had with COVID-19. I mean, does that sound right? And maybe we can talk about that multiplier effect of being around so many different people.
Right. I mean, I think the challenge in schools is not only the classroom itself, which can be prepared, as we just heard, you know, with seats apart and face masks. But I think the breaks are a problem. You know, they haven't seen their friends in a long time. They want to gather in groups. They want to exchange news. They want to talk to each other. So I think it's also, we have to be alert that it's also the time in between the lessons that may be a challenge to keep these children orderly apart. And these are children, you know, it's a little bit harder for them to understand how important it is to always keep the social distancing.
Right. Again, I want to hear from parents and students who are thinking about what it's going to be like to go back to school whenever that happens. You know, Austin Buettner, the superintendent of LAUSD, said it might not even happen in the fall. But if you are thinking about what it's going to take to go back to school, give us a call and share your thoughts or maybe your questions for our experts who are here with us at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. Professor Michaels, as an epidemiologist, how do you think about the challenge of reopening schools? I mean, we were talking earlier with Dr. Duardo about the obstacles, you know, logistically that schools face. What do you see as the biggest obstacles?
So I think what we should do is we should look at the European countries. And, you know, we have been about 3-4 weeks behind in the COVID-19 epidemic in the United States, behind Europe. So in Europe, several countries have opened schools this week. Several other European countries are opening schools next week in exactly that same hybrid fashion that we've just heard about. You know, they come in 1 week and then they are at home 1 week and they come in 1 week. And so I think we need to learn from the European model whether it's going to work for them. And that might actually guide what we are going to do in the United States.
Norma in Lakewood on the AirTalk page writes, I'm worried for this generation. My son, already floundering in person, is completely adrift with online classes. My niece, a fantastic student, is also struggling. My husband doesn't see the point of paying so much for online college. He's trying to get my college son to drop out. Will colleges lower the prices if everything stays online? I think that underscores that while we're talking about safety and about the logistical concerns, that we also have to keep an eye on how much students are learning during this crisis. Which brings me to our next guest, who is Paul von Hippel, an associate professor of public affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor von Hippel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you study educational inequality, and our governor has said that he's concerned about students coming back to school behind, and as our commenter just mentioned, that there's concern about students not being able to keep up with their coursework. Do you think that everyone has a right to be concerned about the idea of learning loss?
Yeah, it's a legitimate concern. California is actually doing a better job than some other states in making learning available online, but it's still unlikely that most students are going to learn nearly as much through the online instruction that's being provided than they would if schools were still open. So there are projections that if students essentially go sideways from when schools closed to when schools reopen, they'll be months behind where they would have been otherwise, and that needs to be made up somehow, especially for the kinds of students who are at risk anyway.
Why is it that distance learning is less accessible for students?
Well, I mean, the research on this has trouble keeping up with the technology. We don't have a lot of evidence on the efficacy of technologies, even like wildly popular ones like Khan Academy. And none of these were ever intended to be a substitute for school. They were all intended to be a supplement to it. So it's difficult to know exactly how effective these online modalities are going to be. But the work that we have in higher education, for example, is that students find them less engaging. One of your listeners said that her son was adrift. And I think that's fairly common, that students who are already high performers, highly engaged, have engaged parents, may do all right through this period. But students who are at risk, we know from randomized experiments done in universities, are more likely to drop out and less likely to persist.
Yeah.
There's a big problem. And then in addition, you know, the whole thing is improvised. If we were told a year in advance that we had to get an online learning plan in place, we'd probably be doing better now, but we had to throw it together in a couple of weeks, and therefore we can't expect the same kind of result that we could have gotten under optimal circumstances.
Right. It sort of feels like everyone was thrown into an ocean and asked to build a boat without any, you know, tools, and only some people had life jackets. You know, it was completely on the fly, completely ad hoc.
That's a marvelous analogy, yeah.
Dr. Duardo, I'm wondering if you can, you know, give your thoughts about learning loss here. I mean, there has been discussion about just how bad this problem is going to be and what schools are going to do about it. You have convened a task force of 23 different school district leaders. You've already begun meeting about this. Are you talking about learning loss? Are you discussing what this issue teachers and students are going to return to when they return to campuses?
Yes, we are having those discussions. And I think it's important to bring up the fact that this pandemic disproportionately affects our marginalized communities, our students and families that come from low-income households, our English language learners, our students with disabilities, our first-generation college students. We know that there's a huge digital divide. Many of our students, part of the challenge for us with the online instruction is that so many students didn't have access to the devices that they needed to do the distance learning or access to the internet or high-speed access. So we are very concerned about widening the opportunity gap that already exists. And some of the things that we're looking at is how do we ensure that we keep equity in mind as we're thinking about the return of schools or our online instruction that currently exists? How are we making sure that the students that need the additional support are first in line to get that, to ensure that we're not widening the gap that already exists between our students? So we are very concerned, and as I said, a big part of it is the fact that so many students don't have access to the equipment that they need to connect. So it is a big concern.
Yeah, I believe in Los Angeles Unified, it's something like a third of students don't have access to the internet and a PC at home, according to, and that was some old census data. Obviously, it might have changed as a result of the enormous efforts that have been undertaken by school districts and by the state to distribute technology, LAUSD distributing laptops and hotspots. But, you know, I was on the phone earlier this week with a mom who did not have, who was, you know, somehow missed by the LAUSD laptop program. We'll return with this conversation about reopening schools in just a minute, but want to hear from you, 866-893-KPCC, especially from parents, students, teachers. What are your thoughts about reopening schools and whether or not it can be done safely? If you don't think it can at this point, what needs to be done to ensure it can happen? Give us a call, 866-893-KPCC, the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Back with more of this conversation in 1 minute. Air Talk coming to you live from the Moen Broadcast Center. I'm Kyle Stokes in for Larry Mantle. And because, like most of the reporters here at KPCC, I've been at home reporting from my kitchen for the last 2 months. This is my first time in the Moen Broadcast Center at my own employer's office in 2 months now, nearly 2 months at this point. But I just wanted to give a shout out to all of the folks who are manning the fort here, particularly Yolanda Ware, who's our facilities manager and keeping the whole thing clean. Made sure I had two pairs of gloves when I walked in the door. So I appreciate you, Yolanda, and all of the staff here at KPCC that have been maintaining things. We are talking about reopening schools today and about what needs to be done to make sure that reopening schools can be done safely. And with me is the Los Angeles County Superintendent of Schools, Deborah Duardo, who oversees, whose office is the primary regulator for the districts of LA County that serve more than a million students. Dr. Duardo, I think we should ask about the governor's idea of reopening schools early, in fact, and he, you know, sort of floated this as maybe more or less a trial balloon earlier this week about reopening schools as a means of curtailing what we were talking about over the break, which is this possibility that students are going to fall behind while in the midst of distance learning. But I'm wondering, there's been some pushback to that idea, people wondering how it would work to reopen schools physically as early as July. Are any of the districts that you're working with in a position to do that?
No. I think many of us were surprised by the governor suggesting that. One, as I said, we want to make sure when children do come back that we have the tools that we need to keep them safe. Some of the things that we're talking about that we need are on back order, such as masks, thermometers, having everything that we need in order to make sure that students are safe. Also, changing the school calendars would require negotiations with our union partners. Some of those challenges, even the fact that teachers haven't had the opportunity to have a break, I want to remind everyone that school is still in session, even
right,
though children are not physically in our schools. Teachers are teaching. We're giving out meals every single day to students and families. Some districts are providing child care for first responders and health providers. So a lot of work is going on right now. It would be difficult to close down the current school year and start up next month. It's just too soon.
It's just too soon. And it's interesting to hear that that was sort of, you're not the first person to say that they were surprised by the governor floating that idea. But, you know, as we've said before on the show, this is sort of how has been his MO. It's been to try and discuss ideas publicly. But obviously the logistical questions are huge here, including, as was mentioned, masks. And I want to bring that up with epidemiologist Karen Michaels from the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. Professor Michaels, if schools are not able to reopen with masks, if you can't resolve the issue of having these masks on back order or not having sufficient supply, would that be a reason to not reopen schools? Like, how big of a deal do you think that is?
That's a really good question. Also, in the context of Europe, where in some countries the students actually do not wear masks, which I think is actually a mistake. So I think having masks is very, very important. So I think rather safe than sorry. Also under the perspective that we have so many infected people who are asymptomatic. So, you know, you may feel healthy, but you are infected, and that means you can infect others. And that is the case among some of the children as well. So they may be less careful because, of course, they have no idea that they are infected. So I think having masks has made a big, big difference. At the School of Public Health, we've actually done some modeling how big an effect the masks have, and they have a tremendous effect on stopping the spread of the virus.
Interesting.
So I think it's essential to having masks.
Interesting. I saw a note in the LA Times from the superintendent of the Palos Verdes Peninsula School District, who was mentioning that if we had to put a mask on every one of our providers every day, that's quickly, you know, adds up to something like 50,000 masks per day. I believe I might be misstating the number, but it was thousands and thousands of masks that they would have to go through. Another question for you, Dr. Michaels, came to us from David, an off-air commenter, who wondered about herd immunity among children and whether it's possible to cultivate that. I'm assuming chickenpox parties for COVID are not something that you would advise seeding at this point.
So that's another interesting question, because at this point we don't know whether we can even generate herd immunity. As we are learning, the viral load determines whether you may or may not become immune, even though the research is still in the very early steps on that. This is one of the key questions. Do people become immune after they have been infected? And the way it looks right now is that maybe the people who were asymptomatic but infected may not be immune, or may be less likely to be immune. So this goes counter to our counting on herd immunity. And let's not forget, for herd immunity, 70% of the population would have had to be infected.
Right.
And, you know, that's a very high price to pay. I don't think that's a goal we can have. And that's not something we can very likely rely on.
Michelle and La Cunada, to our earlier point about masks, I have a small children and my son is on the autism spectrum. It's difficult for kids with cognitive abilities to understand why they have to wear a mask. For these young kids, they will be unknowingly spreading germs. Let's go to Carolyn in Claremont. Carolyn, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. So I'm a seventh grade history teacher, a new teacher in LA County, but in the Claremont School District. And one of the things that really concerns me that no one really seems to talk about is that even though my seventh graders are absolutely incredible and very responsible, with the size of our buildings and the size of classrooms that we have currently, there's just not a way for our kids to even maintain social distancing. And we know that unless they're wearing those N95 gas masks and all the personal protective equipment, other masks are relatively effective, but nothing like what N95 masks are. And so they have to be used in conjunction with social distancing. And that's just not possible with the size of the classrooms that we have and the number of classes that we have. We would need to double or triple, I think, the number of teachers that we have and the number of building units that we have in order to give our kids adequate space to right. social distance.
Because otherwise they would just be standing on top of each other and the risk of transmission, you know, who knows how effective these masks are. Thank you, Carolyn, for your call. I think that's one I'd like to shift over to Dr. Duardo and ask about that, because when I think of class sizes, I think of a financial constraint. You mentioned before the budget issues the state is having. One of the districts you oversee, LAUSD, just issued a joint statement with the San Diego Unified School District, saying that it is not going to be possible to reopen schools safely if the kind of state budget problems that the state is looking at could just get passed on to schools. You're also the financial regulator for these districts. What are you advising districts on how to negotiate these challenges of reopening safely, but also having to balance their budget as the law requires?
Yeah, well, definitely some challenges. I just want to go back and address the caller's concern, the teacher's concern about the ability to physically distance given the constraints on size of classrooms and et cetera. That's why we're talking about only having a small number of students present at any particular time. So a classroom that may have 30 students would more likely have 10 students. So we'd have to stagger schedules. We'd have to have some students physically present on certain days while others continue to receive their instruction remotely. We're also looking at partnerships with possibly libraries and parks so that some students can receive their remote learning in a non-traditional school setting so that their parents can go to work while they're getting their remote online instruction. So we're definitely going to have to make sure that in order to implement the physical distancing, that we have less students physically present at any one time. In terms of the budget and the challenges with that, we have, you know, definite concerns. You know, we're hoping that the federal government, as they're looking to bail out, you know, airlines and others, will make education a priority. We certainly cannot implement all of the things that we need to do without the resources to do it safely. So absolutely, we're talking about what we need to do, what resources we need, how we can have school start in a very different way, ensuring that we have less children physically present. And then you also have to think about our students that have pre-existing conditions, students that are medically fragile, as well as our employees that are over 60 years old or have pre-existing
right.
conditions as well.
Right. Dr. Deborah Duardo is the L.A. County Superintendent of Schools. And just to address the idea of, well, like, is it going to work? How is school going to work when we have to move to these staggered schedules? I'd like to turn back to the professor of public affairs at the University of Texas at Austin, Paul Von Hippel. And Paul, you've studied the something that maybe, I guess, could be analogous to what we're about to go into or about as, I mean, maybe check me on that, about as close to analogous. Analogous as we can get, but the idea of whether year-round schooling is effective. Maybe we should start with my premise that it's an analogy to what we're about to go through right now. Is it a fair comparison to remember California's experience with year-round schools as a maybe an idea of how this is going to go?
Well, first, it's important to remember what year-round schools are. The name is a little misleading because it gives the impression that maybe year-round schools have more instruction time.
Right.
Most year-round schools do not. It's the usual 180 days of instruction, just redistributed. And often it's combined with some kind of staggered schedule. California
right.
used a lot of year-round calendars back in the 90s and 2000s. As many as 17% of elementary schools used staggered calendars at one time. And the purpose at that time was to reduce crowding because of class size reduction and trouble building new school buildings. The purpose would be to reduce crowding now, but it would have to reduce it a lot more.
What was interesting about the research you did about the year-round calendar is that having students bouncing in and out of schools made it a lot more difficult for mothers, particularly, to work outside the home. It made teachers burn out. Is that maybe a bad sign for how well staggered schedules are going to work for students, to say nothing of the fact that academically the results that you found were not as, you know, as it didn't live up to the sheen that advocates had hoped for?
Well, it's funny what you say. I mean, there were some folks who were hoping for great things from year-round and staggered schedules, and those benefits didn't materialize. But there also wasn't a whole lot of choice at the time. I mean, there weren't enough classrooms to accommodate all the new teachers who had to be hired for class size reduction. So there needed to be some way to get more teachers and students in and out of the building, and staggered schedules were one of the ways to do that. The other way was portable classrooms. So there's some great effects on the effects of staggered school schedules, and as you say, it was a little disappointing, but I'm not sure how relevant it all is, because it was all done in a context where the alternative people were thinking about was having students in school full-time and on a traditional schedule. When that was the alternative, staggered and half-day schedules didn't look so great, but if the alternative is keeping kids home full-time, then the staggered and half-day schedules have nothing but upside. I mean, they'll make it easier for parents to work outside the home, and they'll allow kids to learn more than they would learn probably if we continued in the current mode.
Yeah. Interesting that it's sort of it's all relative now, that in the before time, something that didn't look that great. I'm sure there are some parents who would like to get their kids out of the house at this stage, to say nothing of the potential benefits of being in a physical school campus. Eric in Los Feliz asks, given that they have more testing more available now, could that be part of the solution? Maybe Professor Michaels can weigh in on this, epidemiologist at UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. Could kids be tested frequently in schools? Is that something, Professor Michaels, that should be considered?
Well, theoretically, that would be a great idea. The question is, do we have enough test kits? Because now we're talking about a lot of children. And the question is, are we going to just test random samples? Are we going to test all children, and of course the teachers as well and the staff in the school? So I think it really comes down to the numbers. All testing is good, all testing helps, and even if it's random samples, but it's never an assurance and never a guarantee.
Professor Karen Michaels, an epidemiologist at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, will join us in our next segment, hopefully, if that's all right with you, Professor Michaels, to talk about L.A. County reopening. That will be right after a short break here on Air Talk. But I'd like to pass along my thanks as well to Deborah Duardo, the superintendent of L.A. County Schools, the L.A. County Office of Education. Dr. Duardo, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Paul Von Hippel, an associate professor of public affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor Von Hippel, really appreciate you taking time to talk again.
It was great to have the opportunity.
The discussion of reopening schools and the mammoth task ahead as schools tick through a list of a million unanswered questions. We'll be right back after a short break to talk about the baby steps LA County and Orange County are taking to reopen businesses coming up this weekend. Back after a short break on Air Talk.